Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Caries dye stain is something that most dentists don't use because it's time-consuming. Why should I do that? It's just like, you know, why should I...
Good morning. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. I got so interested with Dr. Aguilera, who's my guest on the show once again, that I missed my cue. Whoa. Doc, we're hot. All right. Today's show, my favorite dentist, Dr. Randolph Aguilera, part two. We're going to go after crowns. All right. So get to the website, straighttalk.cc. I hope you're there. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. You can't get to the website, get to the website anyway unless you're driving, please, because I got pictures to show you today. Very important for you to understand. We're going to get to crowns. Picture number one, I want you to take a look, all right, at the anatomy of the tooth. So go to picture number one, and I want you to understand now, when all of that enamel, you're looking at the enamel of the tooth, when the enamel of the tooth has been decayed all the way into the dentin, perhaps, decayed to the point where the tooth structure is liable to fracture. And, of course, this is a decision dentists are going to make, and you're better off with a dentist who makes that decision conservatively because we don't want a crown. This is one reason I've always loved to work with Dr. Aguilera because he is conservative about the way he progresses into the tooth. But if you do need the crown, well, very often... this is what you're left with. I want you to go to picture number. Moving down here, we're going to go to picture number 15. So go to picture number 15. Now there's the tooth. If you have a crown, you had a tooth like this. And this begins an intricate procedure that's got a lot of steps, a lot of shortcuts that a lot of dentists make, that Dr. Aguilar doesn't make. And we were here last night for about 4 or 5 hours getting into the intricacies of this. I'm still learning. Doc, I'm going to have you take it from here now. And there's the tooth you carved out. It's got a massive hole in it. It's not going to stand up. It'll fracture if you just put a filling in there. Where are we going to go with that?
Well, what we're looking at in this picture, Dr. Medici, is a molar. This is a lower molar that had a two-surface filling in it before. By the amount of stain that we see there, more than likely it was an amalgam filling, a mercury filling. And so what we're looking at is the filling's completely gone, and you have the walls on the sides and the one of the front or back walls, or it's the front wall that is removed. And so it's a two-surface hole that you have in the tooth now, a cavity that needs to be filled. This is a preparation that needs to be considered, and we need to take a look at the possibilities here. So what we're looking at is still the main filling has been taken out. Most of the decay has been taken out. But everyone see that dark, all that dark shadowing? Now, is that decay or is that merely stain? So
right,
how do we know?
I want to cut in now. You explained to me that as you go into a tooth.
Correct.
Tactily, all right, with your probe, you're going to press into the tooth. And based upon a learned skill that after having your hands in thousands and thousands of mouths, you can kind of tell if that bone there, that dentin or that enamel,
dentin, correct.
That's at the dentin level, right, is spongy.
Correct.
But sometimes you're not sure. Even at your level of skill, you're not sure. So you take another step that I think is wonderful that I think a lot of dentists skip, and it's called the Caries dye stain test. And you do that to ensure yourself that you actually know whether it's decay or whether it's just a stain in the tooth. So I'm going to move it now. Guys, move to picture number two. Dr. A is going to tell us about Caries dye stain.
Now, Caries dye stain is a red dye that allows us to determine in the tooth, such as we were looking back in that previous picture, is the stain in the dentin, is that indeed decay or is that merely stain? Because if it's merely stain, we certainly do not want to take. The whole idea is to keep as much of the natural tooth as possible. So we want to leave as much natural tooth as possible. And at that depth, if we were looking at in that previous picture, at that depth, we do not want to get into the pulp. So what the Caries dye stain does, as we see here, it dyes everything red. Then you wash it off. So it's applied with a little applicator. Everything turns red. Then you wash it off. If it is decay, caries, then it will it'll stay red. If it's not, it'll wash away. And it'll just be that brown stain before. So if it's brown, we'll leave it alone. But if it's red, then we know it's caries that needs to be removed. It's like rust on a car. You can't leave any of that behind because it'll continue to progress, and that progression will take it right into the pulp, and now we need a root canal.
This is a big one for me because once you have the crown, you've lost so much tooth, you open it up to further vulnerabilities. And that distinction between just how far do I have to drill into the tooth, how much do I have to take, versus how much can I conserve, this is a time-consuming process. You do it. A few other dentists I know do it. Most dentists just skip right through it. And I'm sure, just to be safe, they drill and eat up more of that tooth. So we got the high-speed drill going in, which eats up a lot of the tooth. We've got the lack often of using something more discerning like Caries dye stain. That's going to eat up more tooth because you're going to make more mistakes. And then last but not least, we start to approach the pulp cavity. Now, guys, what I want you to do is go back to picture number one and take a look at the pulp cavity.
That pulp chamber is what we're looking at. We see the layer of the enamel, and underneath the enamel we see the dentin. And below the dentin is the pulp chamber. That is the artery, the vein, the lymph, and the nerve. That's the whole idea, is we're trying to protect that pulp, the nerve. Because if we do not protect it, then it will die, and then that leads us to another sequence of treatment options we have to be faced with.
You know, I hope everybody is, at least I know that maybe you're not in the mood, but you're listening to this show, so you have to be in the mood. Get a mirror, open your mouth, look at your teeth, even if it hurts. Take advantage of this show and do this. I want to make sure you understand, my audience, what the dentin actually looks like. The dentin is not the white stuff. It's the softer, darker yellow stuff underneath the enamel. You're going to usually see this at the gum line, okay? As your gum recedes, it recedes above the enamel, and often you see the dentin. Or if you have crowns already at the margin of the crown, as the gums receded, you're going to see this darker yellow stuff. It's softer, more vulnerable to decay. That's the dentin. What Dr. A is saying is you drill too much, you make errors in discernment, you're in that dentin. Once you're in the dentin, you get into the pulp cavity. Listen to what this guy does. I didn't know this myself until a couple of days ago. You have a procedure you use to protect the dentin.
Absolutely. Protect the
pulp.
Explain this. Yes. Let's go back to tooth number 15, the picture 15, excuse me.
And we're going all the way down.
All right, so what we're doing here now is we know we're into the dentin. We have to try to discern how far we go further before we are into the pulp. That's the whole idea. If we are close to the pulp, then we want to stop now, because we have just subjected this molar to a tremendous amount of stress and trauma. It's that cumulative effects of trauma that will kill the pulp, kill the nerve, and then necessitate a root canal treatment. So the whole idea is to allow the tooth to heal and repair. The body has, since we mentioned before last time, that the body has a tremendous ability to heal and repair if we give it the right nutrients, if we give it the right protocol and procedure. So on this tooth, what we're going to do is we're going to stop. We do not know if the sidewalls are undermined or not because we haven't finished taking all the decay out. The Caries dye stain indicates to us that there's still further decay. But if we take the decay out at this step, more than likely we're going to end up into the pulp. We have gone through the bottom of the dentin layer and now into the top of the pulp, and we do not want that. So we're going to stop here, and we're going to put in a temporary filling, a very palliative, yes, a very soothing type of filling.
Why is it soothing?
because it's soothing to the nerve. It allows the nerve then to heal and repair. So what will happen is the body is really smart in this manner. It will actually lay down secondary dentin. So give it about six weeks.
See, there it is. I didn't know that. Okay, so let's just stop here. You're telling me that the body grows dentin?
It'll lay down secondary dentin,
it's
called.
Is that like the regular dentin?
It's apposition. The body will actually, what it'll do is it will retract the nerve.
Yeah.
And it'll lay down more dentin because the body wants to protect the pulp.
Okay, so we got to hold this because I just learned this. This is, to me, fascinating. So what Dr. A is saying is you come in with a cavity. The cavity's too big. You get this massive hole carved in a molar. Obviously, you can't fill it. The tooth is going to crack. You got to caries dye stain it to make sure you're not drilling what you shouldn't be drilling. Once you got that out of the way, you've got to go to this two-step procedure. And if you do, God grants you the gift of his design. You're saying that that dentin, which you tore away, getting too close to the pulp chamber for our comfort.
Correct.
It regrows itself and pulls the nerve away to protect the tooth.
That's right. The nerve, the pulp will retract, and the body will lay down secondary dentin. So now we have a thicker layer of dentin again. And so now we can go back in on the second appointment. So you realize what we just said. We have said that we have to do this in two appointments, not one appointment, but two appointments. And this is what Dr. Hilton and I do in our practice because we're so concerned about the vitality, the integrity of the pulp that we do not just go after all this in one appointment. That's a tremendous amount of stress and trauma due all in one appointment. So what we do is we break it up with no extra fee for doing that. We bring the patient back for a second appointment then to complete the procedure.
Especially in your practice because you get a lot of people who have illnesses. Not all of them. A lot of people are just healthy people looking to have their teeth maintained correctly. But when you're dealing with illness, people don't have all the nutritional strength behind that nerve, so that nerve is even more vulnerable, so on and so forth. People clench and grind, so on and so forth. They've got gum disease, a whole slew of probabilities that make it more likely that just that minimal irritation to the pulp is going to kill that nerve. And this is the thing. When does the nerve die? The next day? No. You know when it dies? A year later. So you spend all that money on the crown, the time, the this, the that, and then a year later, boom, an extra root canal, an extra root canal, an extra root canal. I love this two-step procedure. I didn't even know that. Wow.
The two-step procedure, the two-step prep, as we call it, is something I think really gives the body a chance to heal and repair. Now, provided that you are in good nutrition, because if you're in bone loss, if you are imbalanced, if you're not taking the right nutrition, the body needs to have those minerals. It needs to have the right nutrition to be able to heal and repair. It's just as if you went in for a surgery and you were in ill health and you had a major lung surgery or heart surgery, you're just not going to recover. So, but if you give the patient put the patient in a situation where they have the proper nutrition, they're working with a healthcare practitioner that makes sure that they're getting the right and proper nutrition to heal and repair, that tooth will do. Okay. That tooth will do that. It will heal and repair. One of the things that we do also, and I don't want to overlook this one step, is that before we put that temporary filling back in to let that tooth sit for about 6 weeks, we are laser treating that tooth.
Very important. Okay. You're hitting the pulp with something that's going to stimulate the partially dying nerve cells back to life.
Exactly. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to disinfect that cavity preparation that you see there. That's going to kill the bacteria. But the other benefit of the laser is that it's going to cause the tooth to it's going to be biostimulated. We're going to cause those cells to upregulate, to heal and repair faster. Remember, every living cell has a certain bioresonance, a healthy bioresonance. And when it's been traumatized or diseased, it is no longer oscillating at that optimum level or frequency. And what the laser does, it goes back in, it puts energy back into those cells to help upregulate so it oscillates at its normal, healthy biofrequency.
So, number one, a lot of dentists don't use a laser.
Correct.
Number one, a lot of dentists don't do a caries dye stain. And number one, a lot of dentists don't do the two-step procedure. How many people now today go in, and we're going to get to the CERAC machine in a moment, but how many people go in now and they have the crown done in 2 hours? And what does this have to do with what we just discussed? And this is my point, and this is why I thank you for coming on the show, because I've got 9 crowns.
Correct.
You know, you did them.
Correct.
We pulled them off after 9 years, and there wasn't a bit of decay under any one of them. And I know enough to know when I have decay. So I wanted you to come on the show to lay this stuff out, and we're going to continue. So cut to the chase now. Go to picture number 20. Go to picture number 20. There's a crown. That crown's going to get placed over that tooth there, number 2. That doesn't look like what we just looked at, does it? In other words, that tooth has been built up. There's something called
Correct.
A core buildup. So that after you carve out that big hole in the tooth, you just don't throw a crown on it. You have to build up the tooth and then decide what type of crown you're going to put on. This opens up a whole other discussion about how you do it right and how you do it wrong. What do you think? We want to just discuss about the buildup now? You want
Correct.
To go there?
So what we did was, when we went back to that picture on the second appointment, we'll go back and we'll find out that those cusp tips, the walls that were remaining, were undermined. So what we have to then is, we understand that an inlay or an onlay on this tooth is no longer feasible.
Do you want
that was it on
here?
Number 15? 15.
You All right, so where he's saying 15 now, we've carved it out, and we want to start building up that inside before we put the crown on it. So go ahead.
Because we have determined that the walls, the right and left wall and that top wall, are now too undermined to support an inlay. An inlay is a filling, basically, that is lays in between the cusp tips. And now if the cusp tips are still there,
the
it's an inlay.
The cusp tips are what?
Are the points. Tonight. They're the little points or the bumps on the top of those walls.
Like where the blue, in this picture 15, where that blue stain is. You
yeah,
see, guys, the blue stain in the
stain
lower right?
There. Correct.
That's a cusp. So this tooth has one cusp, two cusps?
3 cusps, 4 cusps.
Okay, so at least on the right side, there's 3 cusps. So that's the cusp of the tooth, and the decay has not eaten the cusp.
But is undermined it, though.
Right, so you can still do an inlay in that?
No longer, because the walls are too thin. They're
okay.
they're too weak. So what
okay.
we're going to do is, now we're this is the second appointment. We've used a Caries dye stain, and we've removed the final amount of decay. So now what we see there is good sound tooth structure. It's stained, but it's good sound tooth structure. So what we're going to do now is fill that up with a composite buildup, a core buildup. And now we have the tooth back whole again. But what we need to do, though, is now place a crown on it to protect the integrity
of the natural
tooth.
Do you want to say anything about
tooth.
The core buildup, or you think maybe we got
to
get other stuff?
The core buildup is a good quality composite material. Still today, I know Dr. Hilton, when he graduated 7 years ago, was indicating that at the finest school here in Southern California, USC, they're still recommending you fill that with amalgam as a buildup.
I didn't even know that.
Still filling it with amalgam as a buildup.
All right, so let's look at a core buildup. Look at picture 16. That tooth had that big hole in it.
Correct. And now they've done a nice, proper composite buildup. And why is the composite a proper buildup over the amalgam?
So you're saying that buildup there, that white thing,
sure.
that ADA guideline is still do that with metal?
Correct. Not ADA guideline. It's just that the way it's taught in school.
Is
no,
you
have a choice. You can do it out of metal or you can do it out of composite. I prefer composite because you get a true bond to the tooth. And with metal, it's a mechanical retention.
All right. So look at that one right there.
Yeah.
Which is more expensive?
They're about the same.
About the same. So it's just a simple matter of the old thought. I guess we can call it.
Well, it's not a question of expense as far as the materials are concerned, because they're fairly comparable. I'm sure the amalgam is way cheaper, but the bottom line is this. It takes a lot more time, energy, and technique to bond a resin to the tooth rather than
amalgam. When we say bond, are we talking about where... Now, remember, guys, we're looking at picture number 16, and what we're saying is 16 had that huge hole in it you just saw in 15... But as Dr. A is saying, there was a buildup. That white part is this composite.
Correct.
It's not metal. Is the bond here at that line between the dark yellow and the white? Is that what you?
Absolutely. That's a true chemical bond. That's a chemical bond to the tooth.
And not mechanical, which
Correct.
Is metal.
Correct.
I just love it.
Remember, you can't get what you cannot get a true chemical seal or bond with a metal because the amalgam just doesn't do that. But you can with this. Now, you have to remember that this is what you want. Now we have a good, strong base on which to put the crown.
Fantastic. Talk to us about crowns. First, I'll show everybody a picture of the old metal jacket, just like the movie. Picture number 24. That's what they're going to lay over.
That's what they're going to make. That's called a porcelain bonded to metal or porcelain fused to metal crown.
And that metal is made of what?
That metal is usually a nickel alloy component of some type, if it's not gold. Remember, when you have a metal crown, you have three types of crowns. You have a lot of gold, a little gold, and no gold. And no gold, then it doesn't look gold. It's usually a nickel alloy of some type.
Let me tell you about nickel, all right? Anytime somebody comes to me with a concern about cancer, okay, and I do different types of tests, blood tests, chelation tests, right? Very often we see nickel. And if you check the conservative literature, I'm not talking about the, you know, left-wing conspiratorial literature regarding metal. I'm talking about the harder science. Nickel represents a carcinogen. Nickel toxicity. Nickel loves bone marrow. Multiple myeloma, leukemia. Look for nickel in the urine when they chelate. And look for nickel in the bone marrow if you would look for nickel in the bone marrow. It's a bad metal. It is one of the worst. Nickel, mercury, cadmium, lead, bad stuff. And once again, we have a standard practice, a metal-plated crown, as opposed to what?
An all-ceramic crown. I think we have a picture of one of those.
I will go now to picture number 30.
And picture 30 is a true all-porcelain crown or ceramic crown. Remember, the terms porcelain and ceramic are interchangeable. And this is really important because I see a lot of patients come in to see me and they say, well, no, I went to the dentist and I asked for an all-porcelain crown. That's not good enough. That language is not good enough. You have to ask for an all-ceramic crown because now the dentist hears the term ceramic. He knows and understands that you're asking for the latest iteration of glasses in the marketplace. And so an all-ceramic crown, no metal substructure. Because otherwise, if you ask just for an all-porcelain crown, what he hears is that you just ask for something that is aesthetically more desirable by having all the metal on the front of the tooth as well as all the metal on the back of the tooth covered with porcelain.
Yeah, and we all know people that smile and there are these big silver sort of crowns or gold crowns, and you can have porcelain but underneath it's metal, and you're making sure that that dentist understands the distinction.
That's correct. So you want an all porcelain crown, all ceramic crown. You can see there, underneath there's no metal substructure. And this is the next important part. You want it to be bonded to the tooth, not cemented to the tooth. Well, what's the difference? The glue is the difference.
Okay, so when we're gonna drop, now go to picture 20. We're gonna drop this all porcelain crown, all ceramic crown on top of this margin, which we'll get to, this what do you call this on the bottom?
Margin, right there.
This
at the
margin.
Yeah, margin.
You have
line.
To do it with a special kind of bonding agent.
Of glue. Because what you want, doesn't it make sense that to put that crown on now, even though this is the porcelain over metal crown, but we've just assumed that that now is all ceramic or all porcelain, no metal. How do we attach it to the tooth, the buildup? Well, we want to put it on with the glue. So do we want to choose a glue that is water-soluble or a glue that is water-insoluble? No, we want to choose a glue that is water-insoluble. That's the resin adhesives. They get a true chemical bond. Think epoxy, a base and a catalyst. You get a true bonding, chemical bonding to the tooth. Now, that margin is now sealed as opposed to a glue that is water-based, which is simply called a cement. And so that cement is water-based. And the industry knows this. Do you realize that in the state of California, the largest dental provider is Delta Dental? They will pay to have that crown replaced every 5 years. And why? Because they know the weak link is the glue with which they're put on.
All right, so let's recap for a second. So let's go to picture 10.
Oh, that's a great picture of a porcelain over metal, and the margin is now open.
All right, so let's make sure the audience gets this. Because you can see that silver, this is picture 10, Yang. Because you can see that little sort of silverish line.
Dark
where
line.
The crown meets
line.
The gum.
Yes.
That's what we call the margin.
Correct.
And this crown, which obviously, because there's silver, means that it's got a metal jacket underneath, is bonded.
No, it's not bonded. It's cemented.
It's cemented. Now, you're saying that in that it's cemented, when we say cement, your saliva is going to dissolve that.
That's
within
water,
5 years.
That's what insurance companies tell you.
There you go.
Insurance companies will tell you that we'll replace it after 5 years. So that's kind of the witching hour. You want to make sure that at about 5 years, these margins are checked carefully. You can either check them visually. A lot of you out there can probably take your fingernail and catch it up on the edge of that margin there. Or you can see it radiographically. So this is with
or
x-rays.
Or that dental floss thing. Guys.
Or with dental floss hooking in between.
Yeah.
Now, this is very difficult to get the dental floss on the side of the tooth. This is on the cheek side of the tooth. But if you have that same situation going on with the cement washing out and the margin opening up now, that's what we call a leaking margin. Think of it as seepage of saliva and bacteria underneath there. But if it's in between the teeth, that's where your dental floss
guys,
will hook on.
So, guys, where does the food get stuck? Where does the toothbrush not go in between the teeth? So what do? You get your water pick, you get your dental floss, you go up and clean that stuff out in between the tooth. And think about this, you get hooked. Your dental floss breaks, it frays. What do you got? What we're saying is you have an open margin. And why do you have one very often? Well, we're going to get into that. But one thing is the margin, which was glued with a water-soluble cement, has melted away. And now you have a great place for bacteria to build up and decay underneath the crown, which you can't see.
And why can't you see it? Because of the metal.
There you go. Because
the metal,
jacket's metal.
Right. You can't see it visually, and furthermore, you cannot see it radiographically. On x-ray, the x-ray cannot penetrate that metal.
So when you bond your all porcelain crown,
correct,
all ceramic crown, to the margin, you bond it with a resin.
Correct.
And that does not dissolve in water.
A resin adhesive, that is correct. And furthermore, that can be verified by x-rays, by radiographs, because the nice other advantage to an all-ceramic crown that is bonded to the tooth, and if you use a wonderful material like EMAX, so IPS EMAX, it is radiolucent, so you can look through the crown radiographically. The x-rays can see through the crown. Now you can actually radiographically check the integrity of the margins. So it is a fantastic way to go. So this is so important that you understand that if you use a ceramic crown that is bonded to the tooth as opposed to a porcelain over metal crown or even an all-metal crown that is cemented to the tooth, that once you start to have that washing out of the margin, washing out of the cement at the margin, you can't see that radiographically if there's any problems underneath, and you can't see that visually if there's problems underneath.
All right, so let's do this. This is great, buddy. Guys, don't you want to take a breather? Do you have a mild headache? Honestly, look at the amount of information here about the difference between right and wrong. And I had him on the show not really to say, well, this is the right way, this is the right way, this is the right way, like everybody's doing it. Half the things we're talking about, people don't do. Dentists just don't do it. Believe me. Go to picture 11.
Now, I prefer to say, because my colleagues are great colleagues out in the marketplace, I prefer to say options, though. Not necessarily the right and wrong way, but why wouldn't you select an all-ceramic crown over a porcelain metal crown? There are options, so you need to be educated so you can make the right dental choice, so you can choose the right options. You can choose dentistry that makes sense.
Isn't Dr. A a nice guy? He's just a nice guy. He doesn't have that edge like I do, man. I'm sorry. A lot of these guys out here are absurd. Picture number 11. Let's look at picture 11. This is what Dr. A was talking about. Okay, there's an x-ray. This guy's got a crown on the tooth where that red line is. If you just go to the right of that red line, correct me if I'm wrong, Doc, there's that little hook.
Yeah,
there's that little point.
That's an indication of an open margin now.
That's what it looks like on x-ray. But because this is not EMAX, because we slipped that one in, you want an Emax crown.
Correct.
Because it's not opaque. You can see through it. So let's get an Emax picture up.
So that crown is a metal crown, and you can't see what's underneath there. You can see the evidence. You can certainly see the evidence that there is an open margin by that hook. Now let's go to this other.
Picture number 13. So we're switching from the last one to 13. And this one here is Emax.
Well, I don't know for a fact that it's Emax.
It's radiolucent.
But I do know that that is a porcelain crown that is radiolucent. And now we can see through it.
When you're looking at the tooth, guys, that's obviously been root canaled. You see that red circle? That's the tooth Dr. Ray is talking about. And that tooth has been root canaled, but it's got a crown on it. You see how you can see through that crown? That means it's radiolucent. That
Correct.
Is different than the last crown.
And, of course, those circles that we're showing, that's really a ill-fitting crown. So the bottom line is, this is a good picture to point out. That, let's say that is Emax, which is one of the preferred materials, my preferred material in the marketplace today. That's still a very poorly done crown.
That's a whole other thing.
That's a whole different ballgame.
We have a good half an hour. We're going to get there. The art of who makes the crown, how the crown is seated. We're just getting started. So, does the dentist conserve the tooth? Does the dentist use caries dye stain? Does the dentist use a resin that really chemically adheres the crown at the margin, or is that water-soluble thing that'll just leak out?
Does he use a laser to disinfect and biostimulate the tooth?
Does he use a two-step prep and allow that pulp enough time to regenerate itself before we traumatize it again? You think a lot of dentists do this? I know they don't. Believe me, I know they don't. That's why I wanted you on the show. That's why I've been with you for I don't know how many years now. It's been, 12, 13 years?
Yes.
Unbelievable. I had long hair when I met you.
I did, too.
All right. Yes. All right. Now, you're going to make a crown. So let's, once again, we're going to go to this ceramic crown picture here, the all-ceramic crown, picture 30. Picture 30. That crown is made by a dental tech, or the latest and favorite choice for people is to do what we call a CIRAC crown, which is made in a machine. And that machine is expensive, and dentists buy that machine. And you can see a picture of that machine, picture number 17. So when you have to make this crown after you take the impression, right?
Correct.
Remember that, guys? You bite into that glue and you almost choke and you hate it. And then when you open your mouth, you can't open your mouth because it feels like it's going to pull your dentures out. All this stuff, that's when you're being fit for a crown. You're biting into something so that they know how to, in the lab, make the new crown. You don't have to send it to a lab. You can do it in-house in 2 hours, skipping most of the steps we just said were so absolutely vital. You can do this on this CIRAC machine.
Yeah, what you're looking there is the acquisition unit in front, and in the back you're looking at the milling unit, and on the left-hand side there you're looking at one of the ceramic blocks that gets put into the milling unit, and it can be milled right there on the spot.
So we got two kinds of houses. We got the kind of house that you find an artisan, a guy, say, from southern France that's used to build churches, that's had it in the family for 2,000 years, that's been building with natural materials for thousands of years, that loves his craft, that considers it art, that lives, eats, and sleeps it, and we replace him with a machine. That's what it sounds like to me. I know you're going to be a lot more conservative with this, but talk to an old dental tech that sat there for years. So give me a compare and contrast. You go to a dentist, he says, don't worry. It's a one-stop shop. Come back in 2 hours. We'll put the crown in, versus somebody that sends it to a dental tech that maybe has been sitting there by himself with the sunlight coming in, listening to Beethoven and Bach, and doing the art of crownistry. Give me some insight.
Well, the difference simply is this. It's art versus computer. So on average, you're going to get a much better crown fit and constructed by an artisan, someone who understands the morphology, the emergence profile, all these terms that means in the final analysis that you'll get a crown that not only looks beautiful as far as the aesthetics and the biomimetic aspects of it, meaning that it mimics the actual cusps and valleys and the architecture and the characteristics of a natural crown, but also fits ideally at the margins. Now remember, an artisan, a lab tech, can only make a crown as good as the impression you give him. And that impression can only be as good as the margin that you prepare, the margin that you cut and drill on the tooth. So all these have to be taken into account. Now, that is, in my mind, the ideal way to do it. But if you have someone who has grown up in the industry, somebody who is brilliant, somebody who is an artisan at heart and takes to the computer, such as Dr. Hilton has been doing this in my practice. He's been working on the CRAC machine for the last 15 years. He's 33. He's only been a dentist for 7 years in my practice. He graduated 7 years ago. So how could he be doing this for 15 years? He has been in my practice since college, and he has been working on the CRAC machine, learning how to design and the ideal design. So he's taking all those principles that we just talked about.
In this process, okay, so let's take a look at this. You're going to go to work on Monday morning, most of you.
Sure.
And you're going to do your job. And we all know the looming rumor that you're going to be replaced by a software program. And that's what happened to dental techs. They got replaced by software programs. Just like you're going to get replaced on Monday morning with a software program. And yet you know, as artists, all of you do different things, that you can't be replaced by a software program. Now, that's my feeling about this. Dr. A is giving another side to it. And what he's saying basically is, okay, yeah, probably in the overall, it's better to have a dental tech do your crowns. And there are some real specific reasons we're going to get into in a moment.
Yeah. Sure.
But he's saying that if you use a computer and use a computer and use a computer and use a computer, and again, you have the fourth generation of this in
your life. The latest generation, right, BlueCam.
Which is very different than the first generation.
Absolutely.
What you're saying then is if you use it and use it and use it and use it, you start to realize it's just a tool. A computer's just a tool. And if you see it that way and you don't deny your responsibility, you still hold yourself accountable to standards, the computer becomes a tool. It's like when you walk into a bank, right? The most annoying thing in a bank is you can't get a transaction and the idiot behind the teller says, I'm sorry, but that's what the computer says. Thank you. That's what the computer says. Then talk to the computer and change it and get your manager and get on it today. No, I'm sorry. That's what the computer says. These are people, right, who have given up their own individuality and their own sense of responsibility in the name of the computer. And if you don't do that, then maybe the computer works for you. And that's what you're saying. You're saying that Brian, Dr. Hilton, has been a dentist for 7 years?
Correct.
But he's been milling crowns with generations of the CRAC now for 15 years.
Correct, because he started working in my practice when he was in college.
And he understands who's boss.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. That's a fair argument. I get that. Now.
But most importantly, he understands the principles of good crown design.
Let's get into it. The shoulder versus the camphor. I want you guys to do this. I want you to just... This is where you really got to put the beanies on. You got to think here. I want you to look at two pictures, guys, picture 21 and picture 23. Don't blow them up. I put them next to each other, picture 21 and picture 23. Just look at them.
So the whole idea is tooth preservation. We want to be as conservative as we can. So on tooth 21 on the left, you see that right where that circle is, that is a shoulder. It's a right angle there. So more tooth structure has been removed there as compared to the chamfer over on image 23.
Chamfer is what? What are you saying? Chamfer? That's a chamfer preparation.
That's a chamfer preparation.
And the other is a shoulder preparation.
Correct. Shoulder preparation. And you can see by comparing that you're going to take away less tooth structure with a chamfer preparation at the margin versus a shoulder preparation.
So shoulder on 21's right angle, that's inside that red circle. It's
correct.
Right angle. They're taking more tooth versus 23, which is chamfer, where that burr is, that sort of like drill. And it's sloped, meaning they took less tooth.
Correct.
Now, Cirac, the machine, the two-hour dandy, is going to do a shoulder.
The recommended preparation is that shoulder. Why? Because you need that width at that margin for strength.
Which means they're going to take more tooth.
Correct.
If you use a Cirac.
Correct.
And that's the problem with it, because you don't want that right angle there. You want the chamfer 23, because at the base of the tooth is massive compressive force, and you want more of that width on the tooth. So, this I learned yesterday from you, which is fascinating. Dr. Hilton, being in charge of the machine, rather than the machine being in charge of him, okay, has done what?
He can go in and alter the prep design, the crown design to accommodate a chamfer prep.
I'll guarantee you that most people working Cirac machines don't do a chamfer prep with a Cirac machine.
That's correct. It's much harder. It's you'll see failure after failure until you learn how to design that crown preparation at the margin properly.
See, I love that. That's big, because it tells me that if you're in control and you have the correct perspective, you can use computers, software programs, technology, and get the best of both worlds. And that's the attitude I want to leave you guys with, not to be scared, okay, of technology, but to have the right attitude as you use technology. This is something we're not doing, believe me. Just ask yourself and remember what I'm saying the next time your bank teller tells you the computer says. So,
and there are many times Dr. Hilton come to me and say, you know, I've milled this three times and I'm not getting the fit I want. I'm not getting the proper, what I know is the proper fit at the margin, because the computer is just not allowing me to do it. He says, fine, I'm sending it to the lab, because the lab tech then is going to be able to
give us what
we want.
I love your practice. This is the art of dentistry, not wham, bam, slam. And this makes a huge difference, because each of those teeth are alive. Each of those teeth send force vectors up the maxilla, into the ethmoid, into the sphenoid. Your bite, your tooth structure controls your hypothalamus, your pituitary. And that neuroendocrine system is running the show. I got involved in dentistry because dentistry is about the health of the body, not about your smile. Look at picture 22. Just so you guys know the terms here. You going to say anything, Doc, about the art? I mean, I think you take it for granted, but I'll guarantee you that margin where you see in this picture number 22, where you see this shelf being carved out around the tooth, that's called the margin.
That's the margin, correct.
When you don't do this correctly, and we've enumerated the ways, you have picture 27. Talk to us about this, picture 27.
Well, what we're looking at is on this tooth, we have that large tooth. It's tooth number 7 there. What you look at near the gum line, you can see that darkness there. That is definitely an open margin. That's the kind of patient that comes in and says, you know, I can get my fingernail up under the edge.
Dental floss caught in that.
Dental floss catches everything.
Okay, going
food
into
catches
it.
On that.
And now, I'm going to throw this in because I know I'm going to forget it. If there's no decay there, okay, that you can see, you can still have decay underneath that crown.
That's correct. And if it is metal underneath there, you can't see
you
that radiographic.
You can't see it on x-ray. Now, this is something that you and I did.
Right.
Okay. If there's decay under that crown, I'm saying to you, a dentist, generally, I've observed this, I've been on top of this, is not going to look at that and say, there's an open margin there. He's not going to say to that 60-year-old guy in his office, I'll bet you if I pull that crown off, there's going to be so much decay there, that tooth's going south. It's going to be in the nerve root real soon, and it's going to get complicated. He's not going to do that. You know why? Because if he pulls off that crown, and he sees that decay, and he takes that decay out, that's going to become a root canal. So what happens to the patient? The patient walks in. He only knows maybe every now and then he gets dental floss caught in there.
Correct.
He doesn't want to know anything about that tooth. The dentist sees it, and rather than pulling the crown and preserving the tooth by taking out the decay before it gets to the nerve root, the dentist leaves it alone.
Right, because it doesn't hurt the patient.
And because...
No pain.
You got it. And who's going to get blamed if that dentist takes the initiative? The dentist, because the patient's going to say, that tooth didn't bother me, and now I have a root canal. So I just spent an extra $3,500 when I didn't even have a problem with the tooth. So if a guy comes in and he's 65 years old, and he's got four or five of these crowns that, since we don't like going to the dentists, right, have been there for 20 years, it's a water-soluble glue... It wasn't well margined in the first place. They're all leaking, but no pain. The dentist leaves it alone.
That's correct.
And then when that guy's 80, he has no teeth. And that's what you don't do.
Correct.
You certainly don't do it to me. That's why we had margins that weren't even leaking, and we took the crowns off anyway after 8 years and didn't find any tooth decay. And I know because I was watching the TV screen while you were pushing your probe into my dentin. Bravo.
Let's go back to that one picture. I wanted to point out one thing, the one where we show the margin, the teeth where we
yes.
had the margin right,
right
here.
There?
Yes.
Picture 22, guys. Go back to picture 22.
I want to show you this, that in our practice, that this is just a standard in our practice. I'm 66 years old, so it's understandable if I use some help for my vision. I use loops with an LED light. I stopped using the overhead light. I have an ADEC track light. I stopped using it years and years ago. Why? Because I now have an LED light that is attached to my glasses that are attached to my loops. What are loops? That's magnification. I wear magnification. Dr. Hilton's 33 years old. He has eyes like an eagle. He wears magnification. It only makes sense to wear magnification when you do this kind of work. That's what enables us to give that kind of a margin, an ideal margin preparation, so that we can get the perfect impression. And it's important. You just can't get sometimes the imperfect impression with the first time. So you keep taking those impressions till it is perfect. Because you cannot have a lab tech give you a perfect crown if you give him an imperfect impression.
Meaning, after you carve out that margin, which
correct.
Is its own art form.
Correct.
And you have to have fantastic hands to do that.
And vision.
Okay, there you go. After that's done, you put that silly putty in their mouth and make them close down on it.
Correct.
And then they pull it open and they look in there and there's a mold of the tooth. That mold is the impression that goes, say, ideally to the dental, goes to the dental tech.
Sure.
And the dental tech then can only make a crown as good as the margin you made and the impression you took.
That's correct. That's so important.
Okay. At which point, then, you take that crown, comes back a week or two later, and you put that on. And then you have to make sure that that crown seats correctly on that ledge.
Correct.
And if that's not right, that crown goes back.
That's correct.
You bet. I'd say you've sent back, of all the crowns you put on me, probably about 15% of the crowns.
But it has to be perfect.
Yeah.
And not only does the margin have to be perfect, but the contacts have to be perfect. What are the contacts?
Yeah, let's get into contacts, emergence. So we're going to, guys, talk about some of the innuendos. We're going to introduce some words here. What picture do you think we ought to use? You want to use this one for contacts? 27?
Sure, that's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Guys, look at picture 27. Dr. Aguilar is going to explain two words, emergence and contacts. This is how you put the crown in, how you create it in relationship to the teeth next to it.
Okay, so when the crown is made, there's some things that you want to look for. How it comes out, how it attaches to the tooth at the that junction we know is the margin. But the shape and contour, because it's really important that the space, that triangle between the two teeth right at the gum line where that little point of gum comes between the teeth.
It's called the?
Interdental papilla.
Papilla.
Interdental papilla is that little triangle of gum in between the teeth. That is also called the interdental space. But where the two teeth touch about midway up before we get to the edges is where the teeth touch and come together. That's where you would floss.
So from the papilla, where they touch going down.
Correct, to the edge.
There you go.
The biting edge.
So
about midway there, through from the gum to the incisal edge, the biting edge of the crown, the teeth will touch. That's called the contact area. That's where you will floss. You floss in that area. So it's really important that the contacts have the right amount of pressure. especially on posterior teeth, because on back teeth, if the contact is too light, it means it doesn't touch enough. The floss, you know, how do you know this? The floss goes through too easily.
Exactly.
And how do you know this? Because when you chew, food packs in there. So that is called an open contact or a too light contact. Now, if it's too tight.
So if it's too open, because you didn't contour it right.
Correct.
Then food gets caught there.
Correct.
But if it's too tight and you can't floss there, you can't clean it.
Correct.
That's the contact.
That's the contact. So it's really important, especially on posterior teeth, that the contacts are too light or open because you're chewing there. What will happen is the food packs into the gum. Now you have a chronically, and if you do not fix that, you'll have a chronically inflamed interdental papilla. Now, that interdental papilla stays chronically inflamed. Guess what happens? The bone does not like that. The tissue, the papilla, the gum, the gingiva does not like that. And so it recedes. It gets blunted. It is now gets swollen and round. It is no longer that sharp little peak. So now it gets rounded. It gets blunted. It starts to recede. And when it recedes, guess what else recedes? The bone.
Beautiful. Guys,
so now you have a larger triangle, and it's just a constant.
Let me make sure everybody's got that. Guys, you know what he's talking about, this interdental papilla. It's that triangle. It's when you dental floss, when you go up and you're touching your gum around that triangle. How many of you have one or two or three or four or five of those in your mouth that are inflamed? You don't have decay. Nobody's telling you you need a new crown. Nobody's saying anything to you. That is a signal. If food gets caught there and it smells, that's a bigger signal. This is what Dr. Aguilar is talking about. It means that the crown, and usually there's been a crown there, it's not seated correctly. It's not been put on correctly, and it's inflaming that tissue, which increases the plaque accumulation.
Correct.
And that plaque will start to create poisons, and those poisons will eat your bone. And you get the bone recession, and then the gum follows the bone, and all of a sudden, your dentin is exposed. Where when they seated that crown, eventually they stuffed it up under the gum, and you didn't see your dentin. And this is the evolution of your mouth all the way to dentures.
Yeah, it's just amazing. So it's really important. And in my practice, especially on the upper molars toward the end of the line, okay, on your upper molars or lower molars toward the back, what will happen is this happens routinely in our practice. If we go in and we have a patient who has had a root canal, now we have inflammation of the periodontal ligament. If you put a crown on a root canal tooth too soon before the periodontal ligament has had a chance to resolve and those fibers shrink so the tooth is back in the normal position in the socket, and if you prep it too soon, and you put the crown on, and now you have contacts that are nice and tight. But a month or two later, the patient comes back and says, you know what? I'm starting to pack food between these two teeth. And I think, oh, what I did was I put it on too soon. I now have an open contact or a light contact. The only cure for that is you have to take the crown off and do it again.
We should have probably need to do crowns part two. I mean, look at this. 52 minutes into the show, and we're really only halfway through the stuff we discussed yesterday. I have to remember, 949-936-0022. That's 949-936-0022. Everybody's got teeth. Everybody wants it done right. I've made a powerful argument here today. I'm glad I made it. I'm going to say it when I find people who do it right. Dr. Aguilar does it right. If you've got issues with your teeth, give that number a call. That's 949-936-0022. Now, you took a minimum amount of tooth because you carry dye stained. You used the right glues, the ones that are not water soluble. You did a two-step preparation, so you gave the pulp enough time to calm down. You allowed that dentin to grow in and the nerve to retract a little bit, so that tooth is protecting itself from the inevitable root canal otherwise. You put the laser on it. So important, I often forget. You put the laser on it to stimulate the pulp cavity because you don't want a root canal a year later. You contoured it correctly. Rather than having a shoulder, you did the chamfer. You preserved more tooth. Then you put an all porcelain filling, an all ceramic filling on. You did the emergence correctly. You did the interdental space correctly, meaning you made the contact right. And now you have to do what? And this is what you do. And I have seen this, guys, listening today. This is overlooked. It's overlooked. It's overlooked. It costs people. How many of you have gone, gotten a crown, and said, ever since that crown, because the dentist does not adjust the bite. And we're going to do a whole show on bite. But the dentist doesn't take the time to adjust the bite.
That's correct, because whether it is a non-vital tooth, meaning a root canal tooth, or it's a vital tooth that's not had a root canal tooth, the bite is so important. Because when you leave that dental office, and 2 or 3 weeks later, you're biting, and you say, that tooth does just not feel right. It still continues to bother me. Not a lot. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being so much discomfort shoot me, and 1 being so minor I'm embarrassed to mention it, it bothers me like a 1 or 2, maybe a 3 or 4. Not so much, but I can live with that. No, a healthy, normal tooth, whether it has a crown on it or a filling in it, does not have discomfort, does not have pain. So for those of you who are out there who have teeth in your mouth, and you go to the dentist, and he takes x-rays, and he looks at it and says, no, there's nothing wrong with this tooth. I don't see any tooth. I don't see any problems on the x-ray. I don't see any problems in the mouth. But you say, it bothers me. You have a problem, because normal, healthy teeth do not cause that kind of discomfort. So just because it can't be seen on x-ray and just because it can't be seen visually doesn't mean there's an issue. And we see this time and time again when the bite is not right, either on a filling, an onlay, or a crown. That's so important, because what happens is, even if it's just so minor, just a minor amount, we call that a prematurity. If that tooth is hitting before the other teeth just by a slight amount, it continues to irritate the periodontal ligament.
And that periodontal ligament basically is the interface between the root of the tooth. Guys, I want you to go all the way to the bottom here to picture number 29. Go to picture number 29. Picture number 29, there's 5 different teeth we're showing you. All those little prongs.
Those are the roots.
Those are the roots. Those roots are held in the bony socket by this thick, up by these thousands of little fibrous ligaments called the periodontal ligament.
Right.
If the bite's off, that ligament inflames.
And those little ligaments, and it's a misnomer. We refer to it as a single ligament, but it's actually all these hundreds and thousands of these little fibers. Those fibers swell up. And if those fibers swell up from inflammation, because there's a prematurity, because the bite's not right, then they swell up. They literally push the tooth up out of the socket. The tooth will become mobile. And you say, well, wow, the tooth is kind of loose, and it hurts.
All right, I'm going to put what I want you guys to do today, because we're closing now. We didn't even get through half of what we wanted to do, but that's normal, right? You comment on the website today. I know how much you've been helped today. I know how much you've helped. This has been amazing. Thank you. If you're out there listening and you're lost in Toothland, 949-936-0022, you see Dr. Randolph Aguilera and or his wonderful associate, Dr. Brian Hilton, speak to Penny at his front desk. We'll see you guys next week. Now, next week I'm going to do my regular sort of a show. Doc, you'll be on in a couple of weeks. We'll do another 2 shows in a row, and we're just going to keep doing this until we've got nothing left to say.
Thank you, Dr.
for coming
Medici.
On, buddy.
Thank you.
Ciao. Bye-bye. Have a great week. Happy Easter. Next.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.